Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for The Old Mole, joined by Sharon Grant, who's done dramatic readings for The Old Mole, also voiceovers for video. Our contribution today will be a reading, mostly by Sharon, with some commentary by me, of a deservedly famous essay by C.L.R. James, Every Cook Can Govern. It arose out of his study of the very successful radical democracy of Athens between 600 and 400 B.C. James is a black man born in Trinidad, traveled the world, a libertarian, radically democratic, anti-Stalinist Marxist, a writer of plays, novels, essays, political strategy papers, and three memorable books, World Revolution, outlining the history of the Communist International, also the Black Jacobins on the Haitian Revolution, and also a book on the sport cricket, Beyond the Boundary, which is acknowledged as one of the best single books on any sport ever written. Sharon Grant, let's start at the beginning of Every Cook Can Govern, which James subtitled A Study of Democracy in Ancient Greece, Its Meaning for Today. It was published in 1956.
Thanks, Bill. The Greek form of government was the city-state. Every Greek city was an independent state. At its best, in the city-state of Athens, the public assembly of all the citizens made all important decisions on such questions as peace or war. They listened to the envoys of foreign powers and decided what their attitude should be to what these foreign powers had been sent to say. They dealt with all serious questions of taxation. They appointed the generals who should lead them in time of war. They organized the administration of the state, appointed officials, and kept check on them. The public assembly of all the citizens was the government. Perhaps the most striking thing about Greek democracy was that those who administrated, who guided the work of the city-state, were selected by lot. The vast majority of Greek officials were chosen by a method which amounted to putting names into a hat and appointing the ones whose names came out. In our times, the average bureaucrat or executive or member of Congress would have a fit if it was suggested to her or him that any worker selected at random could do the work that he is doing. But that was precisely the guiding principle of Greek democracy. And this form of government is the government under which flourished the greatest civilization the world has ever known. Modern parliamentary democracy elects representatives, and these representatives constitute the government. But when Athenians took over from aristocratic government, they rejected representation. They refused to believe that the ordinary citizen was not able to perform practically all of the business of government. Not only did the public assembly of all the citizens keep all the important decisions in its own hands, for the Greek, the word isonomia, which meant equality, was used interchangeably for democracy. For the Greek, the two meant the same thing. For the Greek, a man who did not take part in politics was an idiotes, from which we get our modern word idiot. Not only did the Greeks choose all officials by lot, they limited their time of service. When a man had served once, as a general rule, he was excluded from serving again because the Greeks believed in rotation, everybody taking his turn to administer the state.
Sharon, you read from James, that was all James. He discussed the basic principle of Athenian democracy, that the highest decision-making body was the public assembly of all citizens, all were equal, all had the capacity and responsibility to run the society. Any who avoided that responsibility to engage in politics were idiotes, and it meant something different in Greek, not the way we use the word idiot. That all were selected by lot, and in their lifetime all served at one time or another. C.L.R. James then, in his essay, Every Cook Can Govern, he then discussed the organization, the basic positions of Athenian very radical democracy.
Yes, here's James again. We must get rid of the idea that there was anything primitive in the organization of the government of Athens. On the contrary, it was a miracle of democratic procedure, which would be beyond the capacity of any modern body of politicians and lawyers, simply because they believe that when every man has a vote, that itself means that equality is established. The assembly appointed a council of 500 to be responsible for the administration of the city and the carrying out of decisions. But the council was governed by the same principle of equality. The city was divided into 10 divisions, and the year was divided into 10 periods. Each section of the city selected 50 men by lot to serve on the council. All the councilors of each section held office for 1/10 of the year, so that 50 people were always in charge of the administration. The order in which the group of 50 councilors from each section of the city should serve was determined by lot. Every day, the 50 who were serving chose someone to preside over them, and he also was chosen by lot. When members had served on the council, they were forbidden to serve a second time. Thus, every person had a chance to serve. And here we come to one of the great benefits of the system. After a number of years, practically every citizen had had an opportunity to be a member of the administration, so that the body of citizens who formed the public assembly consisted of men who were familiar with the business of government. The Greeks had very few permanent functionaries. They preferred to appoint special boards of private citizens. Each of these boards had its own very carefully defined sphere of work. The coordination of all these various spheres of work was carried out by the council. A great number of special commissions helped to carry out the executive work. For example, there were 10 members of a commission to see after naval affairs, and 10 members of a commission to hear complaints against magistrates at the end of their term. One very interesting commission was the Commission for the Conduct of Religious Ceremonies. The Greeks were a very religious people, but most of the priests and officials of the temples were elected and were, for the most part, private citizens. The Greeks would not have any bunch of bishops, archbishops, popes, and other religious bureaucrats who were supported by organized religion. The Greeks, or to be more strict, the Athenians, although many other cities followed Athens, knew very well that it was necessary to elect specially qualified men for certain posts. The commanders of the army and of the fleet were selected for their military knowledge and capacity, and yet that by itself can be easily misunderstood. The essence of the matter is that the generals were so surrounded by the general democratic practices of the Greeks, the ordinary Greek was so vigilant against what he called tyranny, that it was impossible for generals to use their positions as they might have been able to do in an ordinary bureaucratic or representative form of government. At every turn, we see the extraordinary confidence that these people had in the ability of the ordinary person, the grocer, the candlestick maker, the carpenter, the sailor, the tailor, whatever the trade of the individual, whatever his education, he was chosen by lot to do the work the state required.
This is KB Radio 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here with Sharon Grant reading and commenting on the essay Every Man Can Govern by C.L.R. James, a black scholar born in Trinidad, traveled the world, wrote plays, novels, political essays, and books, also organized African and international organizations. Sharon Grant just read on the principles of Athenian democracy that men had the capacity and responsibility to make and discuss laws and minister them to, and that most positions were filled by lottery, pulling names from the hat, even some of the highest decision-making positions in the assembly and consuls and various other bodies. Sharon Grant, few Athenians were rich. Most could not afford to stop their work as shoemakers, bakers, farmers, tailors, weavers. But Athens had a way to make sure they could serve.
Yes, C.L.R. James explains why in the essay, and I quote, "The great strength of the system was that the masses of the people were paid for the political work that they did. Politics, therefore, was not the activity of your spare time, nor the activity of experts paid specially to do it. And there is no question that in the socialist society, the politics, for example, of the workers' organizations and the politics of the state will be looked upon as the Greeks looked upon it, a necessary and important part of work, a part of the working day. A simple change like that would revolutionize contemporary politics overnight." And then James continues in the essay Every Cook Can Govern on the Athenian accomplishment. I quote, "Now, if the ancient Greeks had done little beside invent and practice this unique form of human equality in government, they would have done enough to be remembered. The astonishing thing is that they laid the intellectual foundation of Western Europe. Today, when we speak about philosophy, logic, dialect, when we speak of politics, democracy, oligarchy, constitution, law, when we speak of oratory, rhetoric, ethics, when we speak of drama, of tragedy and comedy, when we speak of history, when we speak of culture and architecture, in all these things, we use the terms and build on the foundations that were discovered and developed by the Greeks. This is the greatest lesson of the Athenian democracy for us today. It is in the days when every citizen could and did govern equally with any other citizen, when, in other words, equality was carried to its extreme, that the city produced the most varied, comprehensive, and brilliant body of geniuses that the world has ever known."
Of course, that raised the question for James, how did so many geniuses, or men of genius, rather, how did they arise? Sealer James sought to answer that question by quoting both Karl Marx and also Pericles, the great Athenian general and historian. After being the chief military officer of Athens, Pericles had to apply each year to the consul and assembly for the position of general of military forces that included all Athenian men. As in being a historian, however, he didn't have to ask for anybody's blessings. All Athenians had freedom of speech, and every Athenian could write and say anything he wanted, even those like the early Plato who favored expert rule. Here's Pericles on why Athens produced so many people still considered geniuses. Here's Pericles according to the translation. "Taking everything together, then, I declare that our city is an education to Greece. And I declare that, in my opinion, each single one of our citizens, in all the manifold aspects of life, is able to show himself the rightful lord and owner of his own person, and do this, moreover, with exceptional grace and exceptional versatility." As James wrote and quoted, Karl Marx described the future type of man in strikingly similar terms. This is Marx. "That the man of a socialist society will be fully developed individual, fit for a variety of labors, ready to face any change of production, and to whom the different social functions he performs are but so many modes of giving free scope to his own natural and acquired powers." Continuing to read from James, referring to Pericles, "This conception of the citizen was not an aspiration. It was a fact. Athens was profoundly egalitarian. Pericles shows us the freedom to do and think as you please, not only in politics, but in private life. This was the lifeblood of Greeks." In that same speech, quoted above, Pericles says, "And just as our political life is free and open, so is our day-to-day life and our relations with each other. We do not get into a state with our next-door neighbor if he enjoys himself in his own way, nor are we given the kind of black looks which, though they do no real harm, still do hurt people's feelings. We are free and tolerant in our private lives, but in public affairs we keep to the law. That is because it commands our deep respect." Of course, not everybody agreed. There was always opposition in Athens. Many who wanted another form of government.
Yes, and again quoting James, "Intellectuals like Plato and Aristotle detested the system, and Socrates thought the government should be by experts and not by the common people. For centuries, philosophers and political writers, bewildered by these Greeks, who, when they said equality, meant it, have either abused this democracy or tried to explain that this direct democracy was suitable only for the city-state. Large modern communities, they say, are unsuitable for such a form of government. I and my comrades believe that the larger the modern community, the more imperative it is for it to govern itself by the principle of direct democracy. It need not be a mere copy of the Greek. Otherwise, we face a vast an ever-growing bureaucracy, and ruling elite. That is why a study, however brief, of the Constitution and governmental procedures of Greek democracy is so important for us today.
Thanks, Sharon. We're nearing the end of the essay, Every Cook Can Govern. C.L.R. James tells us democracy is always challenged. He points out that even through Athenian history, the struggle to maintain democracy was continued. Here I quote James, "The old aristocratic class and some of the wealthy people made attempts to destroy the democratic constitution and institute the rule of the privileged. They had temporary success, but were ultimately defeated every time. In the end, Athenian democracy was defeated, but by a foreign enemy and not from inside." That was James on how elites operate. They operate to constantly seek power and more power and then set up police forces to make sure the unruly people stay quiet. In any event, that concludes our reading and commentary. It was the essay by C.L.R. James, Every Cook Can Govern, read masterfully by Sharon Grant. Cable is among the best, most thoughtful, critical, liberatory radio stations on the planet and democratically run, indeed, by a yearly assembly. That said, we need some monetary help to stay on the air, and we hope you go to the Cable website and contribute. Now, one final point about James and his essay. He was writing about ancient Athens. James knew it was relevant for the day, and he lived to a ripe old age and died in 1989, a person who lived through almost the entirety of the 20th century, all of its immense changes and struggles. I submit that ancient Athens is even more relevant today than it was in James' time, because if humanity is to survive climate warming under roasting, we'll have to totally reconstruct our means of production, how we live, our cultures. We have to vastly reduce human consumption, surely in the higher classes of the industrialized countries, and also change our ways of life and the means of happiness and fulfillment. It cannot be through consumption. For me, the life of the Athenian, not much consumption, not much in the way of airplanes and automobiles, no central air conditioning. But the average Athenian had a life very rich in reasoning together, thinking, creating, enjoying great festivals and celebrations and sports events, taking care of one another. That seems to me a model we should start developing very soon. If not, if we continue with business as usual, there will be a catastrophic reckoning, perhaps extinction. Dare to struggle, dare to win. Sharon Grant, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.